scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left.
Off the glass in left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get it going. Happy Thursday, and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome with Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It is Thursday, October 24th. Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, Vicks.
Hello, Patty. How are we doing over there, pal?
Sorry
I asked.
Printer issues, you know.
No, I don't. It's been a minute since I printed anything. You're my designated printer.
That's a good point. I am a great designated printer as well. Hey, here we are, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts, and here are the Flames as they get set to host the Carolina Hurricanes on Thursday night. Flames are 5-0-1, which, as we know, is the best six-game start in franchise history, and really curious as to how you're feeling about this, Mr. Vickers, and how people on the text line, if you're listening right now, are feeling about this. 960-960. Because inevitably, when a team gets off to a surprising start, which I don't think anybody, as much as I think there was some decent optimism in this market about what the Flames could be, and as much as, you know, there were thoughts that, you know, them being 31st or 32nd overall, that doesn't make any sense. I still think it's fair to say that this is a very surprising start to the season for the Flames. So inevitably, when a team gets off to a surprising start like the Flames have gotten off to, you start having people wondering if it's sustainable. Like, I see it from non-Flames fans on the text line and on social media all the time. A lot of 780s saying, oh, this isn't going to last and that type of stuff. And fair enough. A lot of people up in the mentions on Twitter saying, yeah, well, when is this going to expire, or when is this going to fall off? And that's fair enough. You hear things like they'll come back down to earth, or they're smoke and mirrors, or a mirage, or the word of 10 years ago when the Flames had that great season in 2014-15, unsustainable. So let's dig into that conversation. Let's dig into how much of what we're seeing right now truly is sustainable or is not sustainable, and how much of this start can the Flames continue over the next 76 games. I think it's a fair conversation, and I think it's one that a lot of people are probably having around the NHL right now.
Well, and that's fair, because when you have a team, and this isn't just singling out the Calgary Flames, but when you have a team that's expected from the get-go to not be a contender for a Stanley Cup playoff position, much less a Stanley Cup themselves, and they go ahead and start 5-0-1, have a 917 points percentage through the opening couple of weeks of the season.
Just a 917.
No big deal. So if we're talking about sustainability, we'll get there in a second, but surely nobody's going to make the argument that a 917 points percentage is going to be sustainable.
That's not.
Not what we're going to be talking about in terms of trying to evaluate whether or not the Flames are smoke and mirrors, or if there's a little bit of substance behind the numbers. But it's fair for fans, media, both in Calgary, national media, to look at the Calgary Flames and go, how much of what they're doing is a short but incredible run, and how much is it they can stretch it out over an 82-game season and be one of those teams, one of those eight teams from the Western Conference when 82 games are done?
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm curious on the text line at 960-960 how you're feeling about this conversation. And there's just a lot of different elements that we can get into when talking about this. A lot of different things that you can dive into, a lot of different facets of the conversation. And because there's been some central keys to the Flames having the success they've had so far. And one of those central keys has been their work ethic. And the fact that every single night they bring their work boots, and every single night that work rate has been a constant for this team. So that, to me, is the number one thing that I will ask: is that sustainable? And my answer to that question is, why wouldn't it be sustainable? We saw for 82 games last year, even though they didn't make the playoffs, and even though it was a generally unsuccessful season and a frustrating season in a lot of ways with a lot of turmoil, at the same time, Vicks, the one thing that we saw and my biggest takeaway from last season was the fact they played for this head coach and the fact that they did that. There was, as I've said many times, you probably could count on one hand the amount of times the Flames were the second hardest working team in a game. Sometimes their work ethic was matched, and sometimes things went against them or whatever the case may be, but very rarely did you come away from a game saying the Flames didn't work and didn't come to play, and that facet of their game always seemed to be just fine.
Yeah, that's fair, even more so when you compare the season prior to it, where there were some nights it seemed that the Calgary Flames didn't show up. Last year was much different in that regard. It's a tricky question for me to answer because, yes, you can control that work ethic, and we've seen it through six games, and there's no reason to think that the effort can't be there. But the execution that comes with that effort, I think, sometimes will come in and out, and that's just one, human nature, but two, a product of the style of game that they play. They're fifth in hits in the NHL so far this season, 12th in blocked shots. That hurts. Like, literally, I'm not figuratively. That wears a team out. That wears a team down. And if the Calgary Flames are able to sort of sustain the level that they've played through six, now over 82, playing that style of game, hey, some team has to finish in the top five. Five teams have to finish in the top five in that category and block shots. Of course, the higher up you are, maybe not necessarily as great, because that means you're playing without the puck. But the fact of the matter remains, there are teams that are going to be top five in hits. There are teams that are going to be top five in block shots. So it's not unsustainable that way. It's just a really hard brand day in, day out when you're playing.
It's three taxing,
of four.
Right?
It'll tax you, and it'll really test this team physically, but it also tests mentally as well when you're always diving in front of block shots or you're finishing your checks. I think back, not that the expectation is what Michael Ferland did to the Vancouver Canucks in 2015, but that hurts to deliver hits too, and doing it night in, night out over 82 games again when you're playing the second of back-to-backs or three and fours. So to a degree you can control it, but for me, from my perspective, and I don't have a kinesiology degree, I'm a little uneducated in the subject, but simply the brand that they're trying to play, they'll try to execute it every night, but I do think there'll be days where we don't see it as effectively as others.
That's fair, but I don't think that we're going to be talking
about. I don't question that the try is there.
Yeah, I don't think at any point we're going to be talking about, you know, just a lazy night or a night where they just didn't work and that's the reason they lost or they waved a white flag or anything like that. That doesn't seem to be part of their DNA.
No.
So I think that part is sustainable. By the way, just took a quick glance at the text line. Apparently, lots of people want to talk about this. So we'll dive in on the text line as this hour continues as well, plus Daily Flames Roundtable with Wilsey in a little bit here. I do think the work rate, I do think the whole idea of that being central night in, night out, I think that part can be sustainable. Some of the other stuff, I think that's when the conversation starts to become interesting. For instance, goaltending. Right now, the Flames have the second-best 5-on-5 save percentage in the NHL at .952. They've got a .952 5-on-5 save percentage, and their overall .918 team save percentage is sixth overall. They are getting top third, top-of-the-table goaltending from Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar. I don't know how sustainable that is. Do I expect them to continue to each be above .930? With no disrespect to either guys, probably not, because very rarely do you have two goalies on any team in this league that both go an entire season above .930. That is bonkers level stuff. So I do think the goaltending numbers and the goaltending stats maybe regress a little bit. What I am starting to become a little bit more optimistic about, though, is that they can get quality goaltending this year. That I was uncertain about, not skeptical, just uncertain about coming into the season. I'm starting to become more and more confident, more and more optimistic that goaltending can be a good little strength for them, even if there's still a lot of question marks surrounding the tandem of Vladar and Wolf.
I mean, I'll be the first to admit that I was very skeptical at how this goaltending tandem was going to hold up. And again, it's not so much an indictment on Vladar and Wolf, although I was curious to see how Dustin Wolf would respond to being a full-time NHLer for the first time. Mm-hmm. But my concern more lied in the defensemen in front of him and how this D-core was going to mesh. Well, so far, so good through six games for the Calgary Flames. The thing I just look at when we're talking about the goaltending conversation is that 952 save percentage at 5-on-5. Like, that's bonkers. That is due for regression. I don't care what goalie you are in the NHL. When you're stopping, you know, 95 out of 100 shots at 5-on-5, like, that is,
by the
that
way,
is absolutely bonkers.
The only team better than them at 5-on-5 save percentage right now is Minnesota at 955 to start the year. The other interesting thing is that last year's best 5-on-5 save percentage team was Winnipeg at 937. So no team is going to keep their 5-on-5 save percentage up over 95%.
No.
But, again, it's less about the statistics and more about the idea of quality starts and quality goaltending. And goaltending that whenever we talk about this on a post-game show, you know, we always talk, Wilsey always says, like, did the goalie give you a chance to win? And I think that that's an area where I think that the Flames can consistently answer that question, yes, because so far through six games, all six of them, goaltender gave them an opportunity to win. And I know there's still 76 to go, and it's a long season, and goaltending is something that can at times break down over an 82-game season. But at the very least, I think you can be optimistic that they can give you quality starts more often than not.
Well, and they've done that throughout the entire season, and some on the text line will point out, well, look at Dan Vladar's first period. Well, look at his second and third period in that Vancouver game where he held the Flames in it and gave them a chance to rally. They did. They came back. They won in overtime. The thing that makes me more optimistic about this 9.52 save percentage at 5-on-5 is I just surfed over to MoneyPuck and looked at goals saved above expected. They are not dominating in that category. Dustin Wolf, 1.4 goals saved above expected. That's 22nd in the NHL. Dan Vladar is actually at minus 0.3, so basically breaking even at this point. It's not as though each goaltender is up.
They're not stealing games, right?
They are and they aren't. Like, analytically, they aren't. But you go and you look at, say, well, Dustin Wolf's been a star in every game that he's played so far.
But I still don't. I have yet to come away from a game saying the only reason the Flames won is because of the performance of Dustin Wolf, which is not taking anything away from his performances. It's more just, hey, he was good, and the team also in front of him found the way to win.
At the same time, he just logged a 35-save win two nights ago in this building. So the goaltending has been well above par, well above average, well above expectation.
Definitely above expectation.
But I'm not going to sit here and be shocked if the 5-on-5 save percentage hovers around 920 as opposed to 950.
If it hovers around 920.
I mean, you're still very happy with that.
You're still very happy with that.
Yeah, that's not a I'm waiting for the wheels to fall off comment. That's I mean, you mentioned it. 937 was the highest one last year. It's fair to suggest that playing at 952 isn't something that's going to be sustainable.
Calgary's PDO, which is a combination of on-ice save percentage and on-ice shooting percentage, Calgary's PDO is 1.06 overall, which is the third highest in the league. And at 5-on-5, it's at 1.05, which is also the third highest. Now, for people in the analytics community, if you want to call that. I mean, PDO is a pretty basic stat, so this is not, we're not digging deep into spreadsheets here, but for a lot of people, the PDO number is kind of the luck stat. If your PDO is high, it means you're getting propped up by a combination of really good goaltending and maybe a higher than average shooting percentage, where in this situation, it's mostly goaltending that's propping up that PDO. Calgary's on-ice shooting percentage is 11th overall, 9.84% at 5-on-5. It is a little bit higher, 14.3% at all strengths, which is pretty high and closer to the top of the league. But most of the PDO bump is coming because of their goaltending, which has been so strong. Still, you know, your PDO is supposed to, like, the ideal PDO is about 1,000, but usually it hovers below that. So you might see a little bit of regression there, which could see, as you said off the top, 917 on the points percentage. You're not taking 91.7% of points the rest of the way here. But I do think that is something that will regress a little bit more to the mean is goaltending. Their shooting percentage is a little high, but not ridiculously or unsustainably high. Still, that's an area that I think you point to and say, okay, that's interesting to point out, and maybe that does come down.
Yeah, I don't suspect that the Calgary Flames will be third in PDO by the time the season's done. But I am encouraged.
By the way, that 14.3% all-strength shooting percentage is sixth. So on-ice shooting percentage overall is sixth, and then at 5-on-5, 11th.
Yeah, and looking at the 5-on-5s, 9.84 shooting percentage, it isn't that much above their 8.38 last year. So for me, the shooting percentage isn't something that they're over their skis on, and they're bound for some sort of massive regression where you're going to see, you know, a couple games where they only manage one goal on 37 shots and they quote-unquote get goalied or what have you. It's, again, going back to the PDO and breaking it down. Shooting percentage I'm fine with. I don't expect that to not be sustainable. It just comes back to the save percentage portion, propping that up. But for the Calgary Flames, and you mentioned they're a little bit higher when you factor in for all strengths, but that can just also be a symptom's not the right word, a benefit of a power play that is performing much better than we saw last year. Last year, the Calgary Flames power play was bottom third of the league. I think they were sitting at 26th, even including a 20-game run where they were a top five or a top seven team. Just to show you where they were last year compared to where they're heading this year, this isn't something that I'm expecting to take a massive nosedive and then everybody can point to it and go, oh, I told you that wasn't sustainable. That wasn't something that the Calgary Flames were going to be able to hold up and prop up their record.
Power plays at 23.8%, 13th overall as we're talking right now. Maybe that comes down a little bit, but you know, even last year, if we talked about if they could get into that middle tier on their power play, they would have been a whole lot closer to being competitive longer. So right now they're in that middle tier, and so whether they're 13th or 18th, if they can stay in that middle tier, even if it does drop off a little bit, I think that you're in good shape. The last thing that we'll point to before we'll get to some text, because there's a boatload of them, I want to read as many as possible. I do want to see them start controlling games more. I do feel at 5-on-5, over the course of six games, the Edmonton game and the Vancouver game in the final 40 minutes are the two games where I have not felt this way, but the other games I felt just a little bit too much on their heels at 5-on-5. Overall, the Flames are 23rd overall at their 5-on-5 shot rate or 5-on-5 possession rate, 47.5% in terms of shot attempts for versus against. So they are underwater in that regard. Through six games, it's never a perfect proxy, but it's even more imperfect when it's a small sample size. But I have felt by the eye and is correlated a little bit by those numbers that maybe they've spent a little bit too much on the back foot, a little bit too much time defending. I haven't minded how they've defended for the most part, but still a little bit too much time in their own zone, a little bit too much time on the back foot. That, I think, is going to be something that could really take a step forward here and could really help them keep themselves in a good spot.
Well, and it'll help the next thought of, I agree with you in that eye test assessment, and you kind of just look at individual games, and it feels like the Calgary Flames have been chasing more than they've been the chased in those games, whether it's the comeback from Vancouver, whether it's what they had to do mid to late third period against the Pittsburgh Penguins, even the Edmonton Oilers scoring first in the Battle of Alberta. Geez, what was that, 9 days ago now? Time flies when you're having fun. It feels like the Calgary Flames have been... That's not to say they haven't got off to good starts. They just necessarily haven't capitalized on several good starts. And then you're in a situation where you're trailing games, you're chasing games. To your point, you're getting outshot at certain periods or certain lengths of time. And to me, that portion, and as it relates to the win column, isn't sustainable. But I also do recognize the smaller sample size and the fact that that isn't something that I necessarily think is going to be the norm night in, night out. So it doesn't make me pause. It doesn't give me concern. But it is something, from my perspective, that might want to be reconciled a little bit.
Flames have played more than 360 minutes overall. 367.21 is their total time played. 128 of that has been played with the lead, which puts them 14th overall. So they are a top half team when it comes to the amount of time that they have spent leading, which might skew those that shot rate just a little bit when you take a look at teams playing the score or the shot effects or score effects that can sometimes play into it. Okay, So that's our analysis. Let's get it on the text line at 960-960. This reads, 5011 makes it really hard not to get my hopes up, especially when the vibes are immaculate. Indeed. Mick writes, I'm very optimistic the Flames D will crumble and they won't have to give the 11th pick to the Canadiens. Roger McQueen. That comes from Mick. This from Leland in Calgary says, guys, I'm very much enjoying the ride and loving the energy I see from the team. Justin in Airdrie says, Flames record feels like when I'm 200 par at the turn. Can this really be sustained?
I can't relate, but I understand at the same time.
That's a Wilsey problem, not a Steinberg and Vickers problem. We're never 200.
I mean, I know that feeling when we're talking 2 over, so... That's my ability to relate there. Wilsey's looking at me like I've never been 2 over after 9 in my life.
Dale says it's not sustainable, and if it is, it's going to help them stay in the middle. What else we got here at 960-960? Justin in Medicine Hat says, I think it's fair to say they can't keep this great run going all year, but with that being said, I like their energy, and they're exciting to watch, and I love what they've done with the lineup changes for tonight. It's great to see Kirkland getting rewarded. We will talk about that a little bit later on the Daily Flames Roundtable, but the whole idea of the meritocracy, even through a 5-0-1 start, is very much apparent with some of the lineup changes they'll make for Thursday against Carolina. Ken in Red Deer says, I think all the distractions last year with all the players that wanted out, this year the team can just focus on hockey, some great signings and trades, bringing in guys like Lomberg. This reads, guys, we need to take it as fans. Take it when we can get it. It's very enjoyable to watch, and they're on a run, so we should enjoy this. Obviously, they're going to hit some bumpy roads, and that's what happens in a rebuild, but they work hard, and they're fun to watch. This reads, I think they're going to be rough spots this season, but it's great to see a team compete with and for each other. Going to be a close playoff race. This says, I was a bit nervous last game. I honestly didn't think they were going to pull it off, but I was thinking to myself that I was just happy they were being competitive. I'm punching holes in the air. Still a lot of, on the text line, hey, you get that theme of the hard work and the, you know, playing for each other and all that type of stuff. That is very much coming through on the text line, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And, well, it should be, because you look at the body of work that they've put together and the fact that typically you have 12 guys up front, 6 guys on D and 1 in net that are all, it all feels like they're all more connected this year and they're all pulling that rope in the same direction.
This from Greg, who says that we literally can't lose. If they keep up the Cinderella run and make the playoffs, that's amazing. If they fall out of the race and get a high draft pick, it supports the rebuild. So long as they don't trade young assets for tired veterans, they can't lose. I like that. That's a very positive from Greg. Adam writes, I think that coming into the season, they were sold short by media fans, etc. I think the sum of their parts is better than what was projected. I still feel very hesitant to say I think they'll be in the playoffs by April. I think the real question of sustainability is what is the realistic point percentage? If they went 500 from here on out, they finish with 87 points. What do they need to get in, and is that sustainable, is the question. Jimmy in Douglasdale says, with the start they've had, Flames only need to play 6 games above 500 to make 93 points. It seems like a much easier number than having to play 10 games above 500. Don writes, Pat, the start is very good. I think the next 10 games will really tell a tale. They haven't played a lot of tough competition. They do starting tonight with Carolina. This will show where and how sustainable it is. The goaltending has been way above expected, in my opinion, so far. This says, I've seen enough hot starts from the Buffalo Sabres to be skeptical. What else we got here? Tiemann in Calgary says, I think eventually the Flames will even out, but they've made up so much ground early on, they can afford to have a skid here or there. This from Kevin, they seem to be giving up a lot of shots. This from Uriah of Red Deer, you guys are being ridiculous. Of course they'll stay above a 900 points percentage.
Touche.
I mean, what evidence do we have to dispute that? This reads, why is everyone surprised about the goaltending? Wolf's a young star. Expectation is he should be better than he was last year. Vladar had major hip surgery. He's healthy this year. Expectation should be he's better than last year. I think that the reason there's been some question marks is because we just didn't know what a full workload was going to look like for Wolf, and we didn't know what the hip recovery, how long the hip recovery was going to take for Vladar.
The other thing I'll just add to that real quickly, this is a team that over the course of the last, I don't know, 4 months of the regular season last year lost Hanifin, Tanev, and Zadorov. That's a big chunk of your defensive core, replaced with some relative unknowns, but those relative unknowns have helped the Calgary Flames through six games here.
Bob writes, these guys are really working hard, and regardless of the outcome, that's all any fan can ask. I really hope the best for them, and I know it's going to be a struggle, but if they keep playing the way they are and have the same work ethic, the city will be proud of them. This says, thanks for explaining all the advanced stats. I don't quite understand.
Stat Steinberg.
Doing our best. This from Albert in Coronation, who says, love watching the young guys getting a chance to play wherever they end up. Doesn't matter. I'm just enjoying watching them play. And Vince in Medicine Hat says, I think a huge indicator will be how they respond to their first stinker this season. Great stuff on the text line so far at 960-960. Honestly, I'm just curious to see how it continues here and how the Flames continue to play, and how the thing that I am most optimistic about being sustainable is the brand of hockey they're playing, or the commitment to what they need to do, the work ethic, the work rate, all that type of stuff. That's what I think is sustainable. And if they do that, what you've heard a lot from the text line is people will be okay regardless of the results. This 5-0-1 start for, I think, a lot of people on the text line has kind of been gravy. And if they keep playing with that type of commitment and hard work, I think a lot of people will be happy regardless of what the results end up being. Really appreciate all the texts on the text line at 960-960. Hey, it is Thursday, October 24th, which means Friday of this week is the deadline for our Rogers Beyond the Seat contest. Rogers Beyond the Seat is bringing Rogers customers closer to the hottest sports and entertainment experience. And to kick off the NHL season, Rogers is giving its customers and hockey fans across the country the chance to win a trip to any NHL game this season. And if that's not enough, they're also giving away hundreds of other NHL prizes all season long. So if you want to enter and be a part of it, Friday, October 25th, is your deadline. The website, rogers.com/NHL. One more time, rogers.com/NHL.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, Daily Flames Roundtable now on this Thursday. It's Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills joins us as well. A live and in-person true Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Flames getting set to take on the Carolina Hurricanes Thursday night here at the Dome, and Flames have made a couple of lineup tweaks, including something that we wondered about over the last couple of days, guys. And, you know, coming off the last two or three games, maybe the Martin Pospisil experiment down the middle hasn't been as successful. And one of the first things you noticed at morning skate Thursday morning was, oh, wait a second, there's a new center on the Huberdeau line with Mantha. That's Justin Kirkland, who we've spent plenty of time talking about, and now gets another promotion. But that moves Martin Pospisil out of the middle and onto the left side of a line with Nazem Kadri in the middle and Andre Kuzmenko on the right. Gents, what do we make of the decision specifically to move Pospisil away from the middle for the time being?
Can we call it the Kadri and the Kid line still?
I mean, Kuzmenko has childlike innocence.
Yes, you can say that. A couple of things for me, guys.
That one rattled you more than most of the things I said.
I didn't know where to go with that. So I'm just going to leave it alone.
Fair enough.
I actually quite liked Martin Pospisil playing at center in the first few games of the season, but much like the team, I don't think the Flames have been as good in the last few games as they were in the first few games. His play has fallen off, and in Tuesday's game, he got benched in the back half of the second period. He took a bad penalty in the first. He took another bad penalty in the second. So that's one thing. Another thing is he continues to struggle mightily in the faceoff circle. I believe he's 37.5% so far this season. It's tough when you start with the puck. It's tougher when you don't start with the puck. So I know that faceoffs were a focus for the coaching staff prior to the start of training camp and the preseason, and that with the team struggling in that area continues into the regular season. And as Ryan Huska said earlier today, they're playing against maybe, probably, the fastest team in the National Hockey League tonight. The Hurricanes have played fast for a number of years under Rod Brind'Amour. The Flames are trying to play with pace. I'm not sure they can skate as fast as the Hurricanes, but Pospisil is one guy who can play fast, and he's an excellent skater. So he does bring some pace to that new-look line with Nazem Kadri and Andrei Kuzmenko. And you've got two guys who can certainly finish with Kadri and Kuzmenko. Pospisil, if he can get back to being the same type of player he was as a rookie, where he used his feet to get in there on the forecheck and bang and crash and retrieve pucks, I think he can create space for Kadri and Kuzmenko and maybe set them up to put the puck in the net. So I like the move, and it is interesting that all of a sudden Justin Kirkland, who's been one of the stories of the season, yeah, not only for the Flames but in the league, is centering two pretty good offensive players, and Jonathan Huberdeau and Anthony Mantha, who I think have struggled a little bit in the last couple of games.
Yeah, I'm okay with Pospisil potentially temporarily moving back to the wing, and I'll agree with your assessment, Wilsey, and the Pospisil experiment or experience or whatever we want to call it down the middle has waned a little bit for me, and that's not exclusive to Martin Pospisil. We've seen the team as a whole maybe not be as effective in the past three games as they were in the first three games. But I really like where Martin Pospisil is landing. And you mentioned being back with Kuzmenko, being back with Kadri. Among the seven lines with at least 115 minutes together at 5-on-5 last season, that trio led the Flames with a 58.7 expected goals percentage, and they also led the team in shot attempts for percentage. So it's not as if he's getting moved back to the wing and demoted to a fourth line or, you know, a situation that he's unfamiliar with. He's going back to the best landing spot that Martin Pospisil could possibly have on that right wing with Kadri and Kuzmenko. So I'm okay with it. We don't know how long it'll last, whether or not he's there for one game, whether he's there for multiple games, but I'm okay with a little bit of a refresh for Martin Pospisil.
Well, it's funny because I don't remember exactly when it was. It was definitely earlier this week. It might have been even Tuesday when we talked about, I don't know, days blend together, but it was definitely earlier this week when we talked about Pospisil playing down the middle, and one of the things I said was I'd like to see it given a little bit more runway because I still think the theory on it is really interesting. So I'm curious if this is a temporary thing or if this is something that they try for a little bit longer, him back on the wing. And, you know, if they have success against Carolina, that probably makes it a little bit easier to just keep going with it and not moving him back down the middle. I know that Ryan Huska was asked about it in his news conference on Thursday morning and said that, yeah, I mean, that this is not the end of the Pospisil experience. So we could very well see him back down the middle. And whether the experiment continue starting on Saturday or if it doesn't happen again until November, I do think, while I understand why they're doing it, I really understand it because he has struggled and you do want a little bit more speed there and you probably do want maybe more of a natural center playing with Huberdeau and Mantha at this point. I can understand all that. I just think there's definite value at some point in trying it again because if it does work, and it's only been six meaningful games, if it does work, I think there's some real potential there. I still think there's some real potential there with him playing down the middle. And this comes from maybe of the three of us the most skeptical on them doing it. And yet, when you hear Ryan Huska and Craig Conroy talk about it going into the season, it definitely got my ears peaked a little bit about what this could be. So I would like to see it again.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's the end of the Martin Pospisil at center experiment, but it could be the start for at least this season of the Martin Pospisil experience for 31 other NHL teams.
Right.
This guy quickly developed a reputation last season for being one of the nastiest guys to play against in the NHL. And we haven't seen that guy, at least not as often in the first six games of this season. And I think transitioning from playing the wing to playing center has played a role in that. Now, in the first few games, Ryan Huska did tell us that he thought Martin Pospisil was getting better and better and better, but we haven't heard that for a few games. And I'm not trying to single him out because I don't think the team has been as good, at least not consistently from start to finish in games in the last few games either. But we'll see. And something else I wonder about, guys. So you get Kevin Rooney back today. He's a centerman. Yegor Sharangovich skates with the team today. He is a guy who has shown the versatility to be able to play all three forward positions. So with him coming back probably sooner rather than later, I do wonder if they maybe try him at center. Because as we talked about earlier in the week, guys, Connor Zarya looks fantastic playing on the left side of a line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. And I wouldn't break those three guys up.
No, I wouldn't want to be tinkering with that Backlund, Coleman, Zarya line for the most part. Like, it's been their most consistent, and I think it's been their most effective line. Martin Pospisil still does lead the team with 19 hits through six games, but it doesn't seem to be as impactful as when he was running around a little bit more freely on the wing last season, so I'll be curious to look back for that. I, like you guys, would like to see Martin Pospisil down the middle more at some point this season. I don't think we're done with that experiment, but for now, landing with Kadri and Kuzmenko. Yep. Not a bad spot.
And I don't know if I'd like to see it. I just expect to see it.
I'd like to see it.
You guys were kind of bigger fans of that move than I was, quite frankly. And I think he's done some good things. But I also just loved him wreaking havoc playing the wing as a rookie last season. So I'm excited to see that again tonight.
I do wonder if, you know, part of the idea might be also if you can get him back to being that guy that you talked about, Wilsey. If you can get him back to that playing on the wing and that you see that for a few weeks in a row, maybe then you move him back to the middle. A little bit more confidence, a little bit more of a comfort level, back being the guy that, you know, he needs to be, and then try him in the middle again and see if it can translate a little bit better this time around than maybe it has through the first six games.
The last thing I'll add, I love the fact that Ryan Huska is tinkering with his lineup a little bit here. Because I think there would be coaches who would be set in their ways and would tell themselves and tell others, listen,
we're
off to the best start in the 52-season history of the franchise at 5-0-1 through six games. I'm not going to touch anything. Well, generally, you can see trends developing before they maybe result in wins if you're losing or losses if you're winning. And I don't think the team has necessarily been trending in the right direction the last few games. Now, to their credit, they found a way to pick up 2 points against the Blackhawks, a hard-fought 3-1 win last Tuesday. They found a way to pick up a point in a 2-1 overtime loss to the Kraken last Saturday. And again, they found a way to come from behind not once, not twice, but thrice if you include the shootout and that thrilling 4-3 shootout victory over the Penguins on Tuesday. But we even had Brad Larson on after the game on Tuesday.
I made that mistake, too, because of the Jets player.
Yeah. And he said, you know what, we probably weren't at our best tonight or something along those lines. And he said that a couple of times. So that's not just coming from me. That's coming from one of the Flames assistant coaches as well. So we'll see if a little juggling here gets the guys back to where they were and where they want to be moving forward.
It is our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek, Aaron, Pat on this Thursday edition of the program. Guys, with Kevin Rooney coming back in, he's missed the last five games and essentially all six games. He's played, one shift before he took that hit from JT Miller in the season opener in Vancouver. What does Kevin Rooney's return bring back to this team? What does he bring to the group as he's back in against the Hurricanes?
Yeah, I feel for him because last season he didn't even play a shift. He just got hurt in practice and missed more than half the season. This season, he has a really strong training camp in preseason. He plays 1 minute and 3 seconds in the season opener and gets hit by JT Miller and hasn't played since. But the one thing, and I think you guys would agree because you see him up in the press box when he's not playing, the guy's got like the greatest attitude. Him and Jacob Peltier both remember when they were sitting beside each other last season. Always had a smile on their face, always supporting their teammates. So that's such a good thing to see. What does he bring? I think he brings a little bite to that fourth line. He is solid defensively, isn't going to probably give you a lot offensively. But, you know, that's a fourth line that I think has played their role consistently well since the start of the season. Ryan Lomberg has been the one constant. He's played on the left side of that fourth line in all six games this season. We'll see him there in Game 7 tonight. But they've had two different centermen. So you had Kevin Rooney for 1 minute and 3 seconds, and he left that game against the Canucks. And after that, the Justin Kirkland experience or experiment started, and
that's
gone really well. Yeah, good old Costco. And then you've seen a couple of different right wingers on that line as well. You know, you had Adam Klapka to start the season, and then it was Matt Coronato. But Kevin Rooney is a player. I think it's safe to say you know what you're going to get from Kevin Rooney, and he's going to give them some solid minutes, probably 9, 10, 11 minutes centering that fourth line tonight. So it's good to see him back.
I think what I'm anticipating the most in Kevin Rooney's return and how he's able to impact the penalty kill. He led all forwards last season in average ice time while shorthanded at 2.35. Overall, he was only behind Chris Tanev, of all people, and of course Chris Tanev, in terms of ice time per game while shorthanded. The penalty kill this year, 21st in the NHL, at 76.2. Last year, it was up over 80%. And sure, they had Tanev, they had Elias Lindholm helping out in that front too that are no longer here. But Rooney was a big part of that in his 33 games. And I'm interested to see if he's able to help prop up the penalty kill a little bit. The other element that I'd be keeping an eye on is what he's able to do in the faceoff circle. He hovered around 46% last year, so it's not like we're talking about a guy that was 57 or 58% at the dot. But that's still an improvement on what we've seen out of Martin Pospisil, who not a direct swap, but more of an indirect swap. Pospisil was around 37%, so it should be a trend in the positive direction for the Flames.
The other thing that Rooney brings that I think is important is that the Flames now have, for the first time all year, kind of four natural NHL centers in their lineup. And you know, Kirkland is still proving that he's an NHLer, but he's a center and has been a center at the American League level for years now and has been looked at as a center by every organization he's been in over the last number of years. So you've got Kirkland and Rooney, who's an NHL center, obviously Backlund and Kadri. And for the first six games of the season, guys, they've had at least one NHL winger playing down the middle with the aforementioned Pospisil. So, you know, even talking to Ryan Huska when he was in here with us after his media availability and taping the coaches show for Thursday's pregame show, I asked him about Kevin Rooney. That was the first thing he went to, Wilsey, was he's a natural center, and that's something that we feel like maybe we're not as strong at right now. They feel that down the middle has been, I don't want to say like a weak point for them, but hasn't been a strong point for them because Pospisil has been adjusting. And I even remember, was it Tuesday's game or was it Saturday's game? I don't remember, but whenever you interviewed Pospisil for the pregame show last, I was listening to it. I remember even a couple of the questions you asked, just hearing him talk about how he's like, yeah, I am kind of thinking,
yeah,
I am kind of adjusting, and so that those types of things can show up with the performance on the ice when it's not quite as natural or second nature to you. So I do think having four natural centers and four guys who have played nothing but center over the last number of years is another thing that he brings on top of. He's a very reliable number four center for what you're asking him to do. And to Vickers' point, he also brings you lots of minutes on the penalty kill.
Yeah, there's been a ton of talk about pace since the start of training camp, and playing fast goes beyond skating fast. And Martin Pospisil, when I chatted with him pregame on Tuesday, did say that he is thinking on the ice. If you're thinking, you're not reacting. And that's slowing you down, even if it's just by a split second. Instead of thinking about where should I be, you just go there. What should I be doing? You just do it. So I do think that that's probably slowed him down. And again, playing against probably the fastest team in the league tonight, you want to play as fast as you can if you're the Flames. And yeah, Kevin Rooney's just a reliable fourth line centerman for this team. I think he's going to give them some good minutes tonight, and can't wait for this one, guys, because the Hurricanes not off to a great start in the win-loss column at 3-2-0, but they do lead the league in possession
by a massive margin.
Yeah, and we're talking about a team that was the best special teams team in the league last season. Their power play was second. Their penalty kill was first. They've kind of struggled on the power play this season, and their penalty kill has been good but not great. So it feels like they're maybe ready to go on a run, and the Flames are on a run, so we'll see what happens here tonight.
That's an important point, too, Wilsey, that you mentioned about, I have no doubt that if we're doing a foot race, Martin Pospisil beats Kevin Rooney. But if we're talking about trying to play fast, right now Rooney's a faster center in terms of as soon as he gets the puck, before he gets the puck, he knows what he's going to do next, where Martin Pospisil, to me, has maybe that little mental hesitation that you're talking about where he's getting the puck and then thinking about what he's got to do next with it.
And the other thing is the Flames, for the most part, have done a really good job staying on top of the puck this season. and being on the right side of it, not getting caught. There have been a handful of odd man rushes, but generally speaking, I think it's been one of their strengths. And Kevin Rooney, I think, is aware enough and smart enough to be on the right side of the puck against a really fast Hurricanes team tonight.
Most importantly, who said this? If you think you're dead, who said it?
Oh, it's from Top Gun. Is it Maverick?
Yeah, it's Maverick.
Okay.
If you think you're dead. Glad. I'm glad you got that.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Glad I could help you out there.
He's Derek Wills. I've left Willsy speechless a couple of times. And
doesn't happen often. Twice today.
Twice today. I'm feeling good about
bye,
myself.
Guys.
He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Cam and Shan back at our Sportsnet 960 downtown studios and the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.